Let's get to Kristen Myers really quickly here. We're going to chat with her now and then in the next segment. But Kristen, thanks for coming on the program today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
I just wanted to, editor-in-chief of The Balance, and I saw an article today that you were writing about recessions and U.S. adults not ready for one. We're not saying it's going to happen yet, but really quickly, can you just walk us through a couple of these numbers about recession fears looming and how many Americans say they're not ready yet?
Yeah, so we decided to do a bit of a survey on the recession, but also on inflation, and just to really check to see how Americans are really feeling, how, you know, adults in the United States are feeling about their finances, and if they feel ready in case, you know, the U.S. does go into a recession. And unfortunately, about half, so 44% of all U.S. adults say that they're not actually financially ready in case that there is a recession. And then, even more worryingly, there's a large group of people that actually say they don't even have enough money to cover their basic expenses. About 20% say they don't even have enough money right now to cover just the basic necessities. So that's a really concerning statistic.
Yeah, and I guess it shouldn't surprise us. We've heard for years and years how much a $400 expense does to so many different families and how most people wouldn't know, or a lot of people wouldn't know how to do that. But we had gotten more savings during COVID. So is it just that the people that have are able to save more and they were doing better, but we still have a giant chunk of the population that isn't able to make ends meet and that have not really improved that situation while others were able to save?
That is exactly right. So a lot of times throughout this pandemic, we've said that what's been going on is what's called a K-shaped recovery. So think of that letter K, right? A capital letter K. When it comes to the two legs of the K, there's one side going straight up, and then there is one side going straight down. And that is unfortunately what we have seen throughout as we've been really coming out of this pandemic. For the folks that continue to do well, they were working from home, they were spending less, they have more discretionary income, they were probably investing more. The folks that were going down, sadly, probably lost their jobs. They were being pushed even further and further back into financial distress. Maybe they weren't doing that well to begin with, or they didn't have enough, you know, money saved to really handle the financial shock and the financial hit that the pandemic was, and they just continued to backslide. And I think that's really what we are seeing here, because while 17% say, you know, they don't have enough to cover just the basic necessities, right? Food, clothing, shelter. We on the flip side have a 17% that say, hey, I'm doing great and I'm living comfortably.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll have to keep a monitor on that. We'll also talk after the break about if you have a leased car, you might be driving a gold mine. We'll get to that story and also talk risk tolerance after a look at weather and traffic with Mary Vandeveld. Your money matters. When we talk with so many folks about keeping with the plan of investing, even during some down market times, it often comes down to, can you sleep at night? And Kristen Myers, editor-in-chief of The Balance, you guys were kind of looking at this idea of risk tolerance. And, you know, for a lot of people, they feel like it's just a gut thing. But how do you really gauge it?
Yeah, so there actually is a kind of a formula. It's not really a calculator like 2 + 2 = 4. But it is a series of questions that you're essentially going to ask yourself. And based upon the answers, you can really kind of decide not just what your risk tolerance actually is, but even what your risk tolerance could be given your particular situation.
Oh, like they say, look, here's where you are, but based on the numbers that we've seen historically, maybe something like here might put you in a better place.
Right. So you start asking questions about your age, for example. Mm-hmm. So inherently, if you are someone who is younger, you're in your 20s, 30s, even maybe 40s, your risk tolerance is going to be higher. Your appetite for more risk is going to be higher than someone who might be in their 60s or their 70s, right? The thought is that your risk tolerance should really be decreasing as you age. Then there's also the fact of maybe what are your personal feelings? You know, are you someone who is more conservative? Are you kind of moderate? You're straddling the fence? Or are you someone who is aggressive? Maybe you do have the spare cash right now in your portfolio that you can really risk it on some more risky, more volatile assets. I'm thinking things like stocks, they're inherently more volatile. They're inherently more risky than things like bonds, or maybe even something like cryptocurrency, which would be very risky and very volatile. And then you also want to ask questions of what are you actually investing for? If it's your retirement, you might not want to play around with too much. You might not want to risk as much, but maybe you're just investing for fun. Maybe you're just investing for a new car or something like that. That portfolio might also be far more risky than the portfolio you might have for something like your retirement.
We talk about trying to sleep better at night, and that's ultimately the gauge that really matters, is if you're comfortable with it. But if there is a wide discrepancy, let's say you are younger, but you seem to be more risk averse, can something like this at least lead you down a path where you try and get a little bit closer to more risks? And that could, in theory, I mean, over time, I mean, that could mean the difference of tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, absolutely. Because, of course, when it comes to the market, generally speaking, the more risk you take, just like in life, the bigger the reward. And, of course, when you're younger, that's really the time that you should be taking those big swings and trying to gain all of those really big rewards, right? It's a bell curve when it comes to your income, for example. And the same is going to be true for your investments. When you get into those peak earning years, that's when you're going to be investing more, and that's when you're really going to earn more money. And if you're someone who is a little bit younger, who is very cautious and very nervous, that's some emotions that you really need to kind of talk to yourself about. I know when it comes to money, when it comes to investing, it can be such an emotional ordeal, right? You think, I don't want to put $100 into an investment account and lose it, or, you know, only have $70 by the end of next month. Now I've just lost $30. So you really have to have a conversation with yourself about how you're feeling about your money and about the risk you're willing to take.
Is there somewhere on the balance I can go to kind of answer some of these questions of myself?
Of course. We absolutely have tons and tons of resources. We talk about risk tolerance, the different types of risks that you could be taking. And even if you're someone who wants to have a money conversation with, let's say, your kids, as they're assessing their risk tolerance, we also have articles and resources on that.
That's thebalance.com. Okay, this article sprung out at me. Is your leased car actually a gold mine? What are you guys talking about here on the site?
Yeah, so John, I think the prevailing wisdom that we've all heard, right, is you, as soon as you drive your car off the lot, it loses like 15%, 10% of its value, right?
Right.
We think of cars as a depreciating asset, meaning it loses value over time, unlike something like a house, which usually goes up in value. That is not true anymore. At least it's not true right now. Demand is so high for cars that if you were to lease a car, perhaps you even bought a used car. I'm in that situation. I actually checked this out myself the other day. You could actually get more money back than what you paid for that car, or what it would take for you to buy out the remainder of that lease. So if you are someone who's maybe thinking about getting rid of your car, maybe you're moving and you don't need it, it's worthwhile to check out.
Right, because the flip side of it is, okay, fine, you got more for that leased car, even if the money difference paid for all the payments, which I know there's been stories of that where someone literally breaks even or makes money in the long run. They got paid to drive that car. If you're in the market to buy a new car, you're going to pay that pain on the other end.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when I was going to purchase a car just a year ago, I wanted a new car and there was no cars to be had. I was told I would have to wait several months. And then even after the new shipment of cars came in, I was still going to be on a waiting list. So I said, forget it. I'll go with a used car. And so you can actually get some really great deals by doing that. But right now it is a very hard time to be an interested car buyer because we have interest rates going up, so that car loan is going to be far more expensive than it was just a year ago. And then there's just a shortage when it comes to these cars, and there's so much demand that MSRP is just ticking up and up and up. Just because you go on a website and it says that the car is $30,000, you might go to the dealership and just find out that that number is going to be a lot different. And by a lot different, I mean a lot more. So mm-hmm. Be prepared to be in a little bit of pain, I think, if you're going to go out and go car shopping.
For sure. Kristen Myers at TheBalance.com. We appreciate your time, okay?
Of course. Thanks so much.
We'll talk again soon.